Hello everybody and welcome to Gleek Out, a Glee Rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mark.
And I'm Elizabeth.
And here we are, our first official episode recap. One down, 119 to go. This is our first official one, right? Because we did a little intro episode, but this is the goods, right? This is the main event.
Yes.
We are here with season one, episode one, simply titled Pilot. And before we get into any of the behind the scenes stuff, like the development of the show and that kind of thing, I think it's best we give our kind of instant take. So what did you think of this episode?
I think it did well introducing the bulk of the characters.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, the start of the episode was quite tough to get into, but I warmed to it pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah. I think, which is not something I can say for a lot of shows, a legitimately solid pilot. You know, this, unlike some shows, you know, your Vampire Diaries, your Teen Wolves, your Sons of Anarchy, I normally judge that kind of thing on the second episode because I always know the pilot's going to be a bit dull because they're setting everything up. But by the end of this episode, I was like, and I don't know about you, I'm sure we'll talk about it at the end, but I was, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm invested in these kids. I want to follow them on their journey to regionals. A little director's note, this conversation may be a little more disjointed than the others, but that's because the episode itself, particularly in the first 6 minutes, is quite disjointed. I feel like the pace slows down as the episode goes on. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I'm not saying that as a slam. But just so if our conversation is a little bit disjointed in the first 6 minutes, we apologise. But the same with any new show that we start, we need to figure out what the best way to write our notes is. Having said that, you will be getting two extra episodes this week. We will be recording 102 Showmance tomorrow, and then 103 or Acafellas on Saturday. So you're actually getting 4 podcasts out of us this week if you, with Don't Make Me Angry on the Sunday. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty packed week. We're going to be in your feeds quite a bit. But yeah, this is a journey that I'm looking forward to taking. So I think we should get into a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff. So this show, believe it or not, was actually not Ryan Murphy's idea at all. Ian Brennan, I believe, pitched it to the network as a movie, as a made-for-TV movie, which, you know, kind of makes sense because High School Musical was very big around this time. So, I don't, what do you think about that? Because I think it kind of makes sense.
I'd always thought that High School Musical came out a bit earlier.
Yeah, but I think,
unless they got the inspiration from that, because the Disney Channel shows were and are still pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, High School Musical was a bit earlier than this, but I think what I mean when I say the timing was perfect was this was only coming a year or 2 years after HSM3.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, and obviously that was when HSM was decided that it was good enough to actually be released in cinemas. The first two were just made for TV movies. The third film, Senior Year, was this big theatrical event, I know, because I was there. My mother forced me to go see it. I hadn't seen the other two, so I really didn't enjoy it because I had no idea what was going on. I remember, so basically, the way I remember my experience of that film is When they were singing, I was like, this is great. But when they were talking, I was like, oh my God, please shut up. Like, get to the next song.
That's one way of looking at it. Sitting in a cinema watching a film that you're basically forced into seeing, kind of like how you wanted to introduce me to this for months and months, and I refused simply because I was too old to start watching this when it came out.
To be honest though, I don't think you have to necessarily be a teenager to enjoy this. You know, because when I was doing my research for this and I was looking at the demographics, a lot of it was families. So, like men, women, children, to, you know, children slightly questionable. But this is a show that families used to watch together. You know, me, my mum, and my nan used to watch it every week on E4.
Oh, that was the channel it appeared on. Okay, fair enough.
And like I said in my in our intro, my room was a shrine. I had everything. I had the posters. I had the calendars. I had the novels. Yes, when there were novels, which I might, if we can get our hands on them, do some solo podcasts reviewing. I had all the albums, I had all the DVDs. I was a geek. I was a very big, major geek.
So, relating this to, let's say, musicians, you were, as opposed to a fangirl, you were a fanboy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But basically, what happened was, you know, Ian Brennan tried to get this made as a movie. And Fox were understandably worrying about it because of the success of HSM. They were like, do we want to look like we're riding on someone else's coattails?
So they wanted to take the premise and put a different spin on it. But the funny thing is now is that Fox are owned by Disney, which I find very strange. So
Because
Glee
they
could
now.
technically be streamed on Disney Plus.
Yes, because they now, not only do they own HSM, but now they also own Glee.
That was my point.
Which is, but I'm not being funny. Like you can kind of see the similarities, especially with like Finn is basically Troy. The only difference being Troy plays basketball and sings, Finn plays football and sings. They're the exact same cat. If you really sit down and look at it, they're the exact same character. The only difference being, as far as we know in the fictional HSM universe, Troy Bolton is still alive.
But I'd say that with things like this, I'm always more of a TV person than a film one.
Yeah, I mean.
It doesn't take as much for me to take in or get invested. The
Yeah.
first HSM I liked, the last two, not so much.
No, I think you said you enjoyed three more than you enjoyed two, but I think that might have been just because after three it was ending. You know, it's like, I don't know. Because they're kind of connected, I feel like we have to do the HSM movies on this feed at some point. Like maybe once we're wrapped up with Glee in a year or whenever that may be. But yeah, and basically, they met with. He met with Brad Falchuk and Ryan Murphy. And Ryan Murphy said to Fox, well, I don't think we should make this a movie. I think we should make it a weekly TV show. And while the Fox were interested, they responded with skepticism because musicals in the movies have been way more successful than musicals on television.
That might be because they're less known. If you think about it, a lot of movie musicals are adapted from theatre and vice versa.
Yeah. And they took a gamble because, as far as I could tell, they really went with a largely unknown cast. You know, I had never heard of any of these people before I started watching this show. You know, I knew. Actually, no, tell a lie. I think I went to see Matthew Morrison in a West End show before Glee started, so I recognised him. But everybody else, I had no idea. Actually, that's a lie. I did know Stephen Tobolowsky as the villain in the Garfield movie, but
nothing totally high profile then.
No.
Okay.
No, but you know, so they got the script written, they got it casted, they shot the pilot, they edited it, they hired writers, they got picked up as a series, and they've been going ever since. You know, obviously, yes, the show was cancelled in 2015. But I think that has more to do with the fact that the Fox execs just felt like, especially after the death of Corey Monteith, that this series had just run its course. Because we will talk about it, because of the death of Corey Monteith and therefore the on-screen death of Finn, the writers had to throw a lot of the season 5 plotline out, because from what I can gather from reading about it, season 5 really was supposed to be Finn's season. So they then obviously had to completely revamp everything. To, you know, we had the quarterback, which we'll talk about months from now. But, I don't know. They took an ambitious risk, and honestly, I think it paid off. You know, a show that ran for 6 years, that's nothing to be... 120 episodes, that's not to be sniffed at. No matter how you feel about the show's quality, that's an achievement.
That's a good insight, to be honest.
Yeah, so I think we've done all the behind-the-scenes stuff that we need to do. Would you say we just get into the writers, directors, cast, and then just get into the episode? Because we've got a lot to dissect.
And there is a lot of cast to cover.
Yeah. Okay, so I may be going a bit fast when we get to the cast list, so I apologise. Okay, so this episode originally aired... This should be said, this is probably the US air date. But it aired on May 19th, 2009. Written by Brad Falchuk, Ian Brennan and Ryan Murphy. So the three creators... Directed by Ryan Murphy and starring...
I'll help you out with this. There's a lot to cover.
It's okay, I've got it. Diana Agron as Quinn, Chris Colfer as Kurt, Jessamyn Gilsig as Terry, Jane Lynch as Sue, Gemma Mays as Emma, Kevin Mahan as Arnie, Liam Michelle as Rachel, Corey Monteith as Finn, Matthew Morrison as Will, Amber Riley as Mercedes, Mark Sarling as Pop, Jenna Uskowitz as Tina, Naya Rivera as Santana, Patrick Kanigo as Ken Tanaka, Stephen Tobolowsky as Sandy Ryerson, Kent Avadino as Howard, and Iqbal Fieber as Principal Figgins.
Did you have to do that?
Yes. Damn, there's a lot of people in this show. Okay, so we open with the Cheerios, the McKinley High cheerleading squad doing a very elaborate routine on the football field, and it's a pretty sweet routine, isn't it? Like, it's very energetic, this actually threw you off quite a bit, didn't it?
It wasn't the routine that threw me off, it was...
The music.
Yes, very loud in my ear hole. Don't get me wrong, it was fun, but surprising.
And they get into a pyramid, two of them fall down, and we get introduced to Coach Sue Sylvester, who delivers the first line of the series, which, what is it? You think this is hard? Try being waterboarded. That's hard.
Yes.
And, my God, we're going to talk about it. She does a lot of questionable things over the course of the series, but Sue Sylvester is an absolute delight, isn't she?
Indeed.
You know, we shouldn't, you know, we're going to be very critical of Sue in this series because she does a lot of shady shit. But for humour, you can't fault her, because I think every one of her lines had us cracking up.
Even when it wasn't warranted.
Yes. You know, there's another one later on where, because it doesn't really matter, I feel like I might as well just get it out of the way now. When she says, you think this is hard, I'm living with hepatitis, that's hard. And it's like, I know that's not warranted to laugh at, but it's just the delivery. Like, she's so nonchalant about it. So, we get the title card, Glee, and then we are introduced to Will Schuster, played by Matthew Morrison, pulling into... He's just arriving at work, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we get an insight immediately into who Will is. He's driving this crappy, beat-up car. The muffler's dragging on the ground. He gets out of the car, and we are quickly introduced to Kurt Hummel, Noah Puckerman, and Finn Hudson. And they're all standing around. Kurt, Puck, Finn, and all their jock friends are standing around a dumpster. And poor Will, he's just so naive, because he's like, are you making some new friends? And Puck's like, he sure is, Mr. Shu. And he just accepts it. Only pausing to remind Finn that he hasn't done his homework or something.
He has to do a Spanish piece on what he did last summer. Speaking in Spanish and then translating.
Okay. And he gives the excuse, almost halfway done with almost all of it, Mr. Shu, and that is clearly a lie. Because when Will reminds him about it, he looks genuinely worried. Because he knows he hasn't started it.
Maybe he's just fobbing him off, because I think Will can see that there's an issue between the three of them. It kind of looks very suspicious.
I think it's more an issue between Kurt and Puck than it is an issue between Kurt and Finn. I mean, like, we'll talk about it later in the season. Like, yes, Kurt and Finn are going to have their ups and downs this season. But Finn really isn't this person. You know, because they go to... As soon as Will's out of earshot, Puck's like, right, it's hammer time. What does that mean?
It's hammer time.
Yeah.
Loosely translated, I guess.
Time to go dumpster diving?
Yeah, but generally when you're diving, you're looking for something. In this case, they want to throw Kurt into it.
Yeah, and, you know, he's pleading because his jacket is from Marc Jacobs' new collection. I don't know who that is.
Marc Jacobs, famous fashion designer.
I'm not into fashion, so I don't know who that is. And, you know, and for a moment, you think Finn's gonna intervene. Because he's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. And then...
He took Kurt's jacket off him.
Yeah. No, but then he's like, rather than stopping it, he lets him take the jacket off, and then he's just like, okay. But having said that, he then, as soon as Kurt goes in, he looks immediately uncomfortable. And that's what I mean when I say we can tell instantly that Finn isn't just this jerk. You know, like, he's reluctant. He's a reluctant bully. Is that the right phrase? Like, he kind of just participates because he feels peer pressured into...
It's not so much just peer pressure, is it? He knows that if he refuses... I think this is, like, a common thing amongst boys. The whole thing of, if you don't do as we say, we'll pick on you instead. Wanting to be part of a clique or something.
Because it should be said at this point, before what transpires over the course of this episode, Finn is the most popular kid in school.
Yeah.
Because he's the quarterback of the football team. And can I just say, I was the captain of my basketball team in high school before I joined my school glee club. We didn't do this. Well, all right, we did, but I was never around for it. And if I had been, I would have intervened. You know, but And we then cut to Will staring at a, what is it? It's a trophy, right? A Glee Club National Championship trophy with a plaque of the late Lillian Agner, who I think we're supposed to understand was Will's teacher when, because it should be said that Will used to go here.
I think she was a previous
Glee Club director.
Yes.
Yeah, and we pan down to the plaque and it has a quote on it that says, by its very different definition, Glee is about opening yourself up to joy. And it's not until season six when we actually get to finally see that speech.
Okay.
So, you know, like, the plaque plays a running theme in the series. You know, it should be, we should point it out now that Finn also gets a plaque put up in the choir room in season five. But, yeah, and you can kind of just see the cogs turning in Will's mind. And I don't know, because he looks like a man that's dissatisfied with his life. You know what I mean? Like, he has a pretty good life, or so we assume. We haven't met Terry yet, but when we do, I assume we'll talk about her. Because Lizzie has some shit to say. We'll get there. We'll get there. Hold it in. You know, like, but it seems like he's very dissatisfied. You know, he, on the surface, he has a good life, but it seems like he's just searching for something more. And then, this is what we mean when we said the cutting is very frenetic, because it then cuts from Will standing in the hall staring at the plaque and the trophy to Will in his Spanish classroom. We see Finn again. And I guess now we know why he hasn't started his homework, because you can hear he's clearly struggling to pronounce. Maybe I'm dumb, but I thought, like, a language class was an elective.
I don't know. I guess it depends on the language, but to be fair, every single student seems reluctant to repeat the sentences back to Will. Like, they don't want to be there counting down the clock till they leave.
Yeah, but you can, yeah, but I can understand that, because God, when you're a kid, just learning English is tough enough. You know, like, just learning basic English is tough enough without having to learn a, as Sue will call it later on, a dying language.
No, I get that.
Like, so then we cut to Sandy Ryerson, played by Stephen Tobolsky, and Hank Summers. We don't really need to talk about Hank. We never see Hank again, do we? But they're singing Where Is Love from Oliver?
I believe so. I may be wrong, so don't quote me.
Yeah, this one I've seen. This is the musical I've seen. You know, because there's a there's a song later on in the episode that we weren't really sure where it was from, and we'll touch on that when we get to it. But, and, you know, and at some point, Sandy starts caressing the abdomen of this kid, Hank, and who is watching but one Miss Rachel Berry? Mia Michelle is in the house. This is arguably her story, right? Like, in season one, I feel like it's very much Will's story, but I mean, after season one, it very much becomes the Rachel show. And okay, obviously this is not the time to talk about all the Lea Michele controversy, but, you know, I'm sure we're going to get into that eventually. So what's your first impressions of Rachel here? Because bear in mind, she hasn't actually spoke yet.
I don't know if I can have first impressions in a first scene that she's been in. I have to judge as the episode goes on, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I do remember is that Rachel is not as terrible as I remembered her being in this episode. Like, I remembered her just being like, she's that typical high school prima donna. The Sharpay Evans, if you will. You know, she's very extra, you know? Like, you know, she doesn't do anything at half speed. She takes her craft extremely seriously. We later on find out that she allegedly won her first dance competition when she was 3 months old. That sounds like a lie, right?
I think I'm the one that pointed that out.
Like, I know, because when we were watching it a few minutes ago, I defended her and was like, well, no, there are dance competitions for babies, but looking back on it now, yeah, you're right, that sounds like a lie.
Whereabouts are we?
Right at the beginning, and we're 25 minutes in. So yeah, this is when we go to the teacher's lounge now, right?
Yeah.
And we get introduced to Ken Tanaka, played by Patrick Gallagher, and Emma Pillsbury, played by Gemma Mays, and the coffee pot's gone because Figgins got rid of it due to budget cut reasons. Sue comes in with lattes, and we find out, I didn't know this, the key to a perfect latte is in the temperature of of the steamed milk. Did you know this?
Yes, because I'm a big latte drinker.
Yeah, but you're not, as Sue calls herself, you wouldn't consider yourself a coffee snob.
No, as long as it tastes nice and it's got caramel syrup in it, I'm happy.
It just makes me laugh that Ken is like, I know for a fact they're still getting hot Java at Carver. We should strike. It's like, really? Over a coffee pot? Really? There are bigger problems in the world right now, man, and you're losing your shit over a coffee pot. I don't know. I'm not a coffee drinker, so maybe I just don't understand the value of a good morning cup of coffee. I don't know. But
I doubt it.
and you know, Emma sits down, says hey to Ken, kind of just out of politeness, really, because he speaks to her first. And then she says hi to Will, and we get a little bit of romantic tension. Or what seems like a sense of romantic tension. I suppose we should talk about this now. What's your first impression of these adults? Like, let's work through. What's your first impression of Will?
It normally takes me at least, what did I say? I said 2 episodes, I think, to figure someone's character out. I'm still learning the ropes with this show.
Yeah, but I feel like with Will, almost instantly we know who he is. Like, they let us know who he is in the first 5 minutes. You know, because like I said, I do get the sense that he's what they call the nice guy. Like, you know, we're going to see later on when he gets into an argument with Terry, he's a very soft touch. You know, when I basically, when what I mean when I say what's your first impression is, do you like this guy? Because this is the guy we're going to be following, so do you like Will?
As I've said, I can't really judge someone on a first episode. It would be something where I'd need a little while to get used to him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and this is the difference between you and me, because as we said in our intro cast, you're coming at it from the prospect of a glee newbie. I'm coming at it at the pr or from the perspective of a glee newbie. I'm coming at it from the perspective of a glee super fan. So I like Will White right off the bat here.
But then I'm not trying to focus on the characters at this point. I'm trying to focus on the episodes so I can get a feel for the show itself.
Yeah, Ken's just an arsehole. Let's just put it out there right now. Emma seems like this very sweet, but also very mousy, very weak-willed kind of person. Like, not that I have anything against Emma. I love Emma. But, and I don't know why, but when I was watching this week to week, initially, Emma annoyed me. And, you know, we then find out there's some mundane conversation between the two of them, or between the three of them, rather. And then, I guess just to have something to say, because Ken asked her why she wasn't at a singles meet that weekend, and I think just to have something to say, she's like, oh, did you guys hear that Sandy Ryerson got fired? And Will's like, a light bulb goes off in Will's head, and he's like, who's going to take over the Glee Club? And then we cut to Principal Figgins' office. Figgins, the kidney stone doctor from Friends. Igbal Fima, is that how you say his name? That's how it looks anyway.
Yes.
If I'm getting that wrong, then please correct me on Twitter, because the last thing I want to do is offend anybody who is of that Indian descent. So if I am saying it wrong, then please tell me. But he's like, I want to take over Glee Club. And Figgins is like, oh, do you want to captain the Titanic as well? Which, funny line. And, you know, Will was like, I think I can make it great again. Little bit triggering in the post-Trump era. But, and then we get through a series of auditions. We get Mercedes Jones played by, and this is the first time we're seeing Mercedes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes Jones played by Amber Riley, singing Respect by Aretha Franklin. Kurt shows up again, singing Mr. Cellophane from Chicago.
Yes.
Tina Cohen Chang, played by Jenna Uskowitz. A Asian girl with a star, it should be pointed out, auditions with I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry. And then, of course, we get Miss Rachel Berry singing On My Own.
From Les Miserables.
Les Miserables, yes. And what do you think of this performance, like, based on, if this was your Glee Club, and I'm going to answer this question as well, who gets in and who doesn't?
Again, it depends on the choice of audition songs. It doesn't have to be, ideally, a mix of both, but if it's going to be...
I mean just on sheer talent.
Okay.
Because a lot of these are bad. You know, Tina, God Lover, hers is laughably bad.
I don't know. I don't think it matters to me that much as long as I have fun watching it.
See, Kurt is talented, but if it was me, I'd have to say no because he's just too much. Like, again, how do they not know this kid is gay right out of the gate?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if someone's gay or
no,
disabled or anything.
I know, but what I'm saying is, Kurt is very in your face. And it's like, I don't need it. Like, these kids are going to be embarrassed enough to be in this club as it is. We don't need you gaying it up and making them even more embarrassed. Like, speaking of disabled, it pisses me off that we don't get to see Artie's audition. Like, they remedy that in season 6, but
I just enjoyed the whole thing, I think.
Okay.
I didn't pick apart any performances.
Yeah, we get to On My Own from Lamez. What did you think of this one? Like, we don't really get to hear all of it because obviously Rachel's doing a narration over it.
I did say that this was probably my favourite performance out of the whole show, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it should be said, we haven't really talked about Rachel that much yet, but we find out in this monologue that she was the one that turned Sandy in, just because he didn't give her a solo. Which is shady as hell to me, because then she's not doing it on the moral principle. You know, we find out she has two gay dads. It should be said that these are not the same dads that we meet when they finally show up in season 3.
I don't know, though. We don't really need to cover characters at this point. It's the first episode.
But I'm saying there might be a lot of first-time watchers, so they need to know who these people are.
Maybe so, but there's still a lot of ground to cover for a pilot.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, we find out she has a MySpace page. She's singing the same song on the MySpace page, actually. And the Cheerios, led by head bitch Quinn Fabray, are just, played by Diana Agron, are just typing really mean. Like, I didn't catch all of them, but some of them was like, if I was your mother, I'd sell you back. Please get sterilised. Just being nasty little shits, right? And she ends, and she's like, when do we start rehearsal? And then straight away, cut to another bad performance. All the performances in this, with the exception of Rachel's and the final one, are just bad. Like, are they trying to make this funny? Because it's not supposed to be funny. And if they are trying to make it funny, I'm not laughing.
It's meant to be an introduction. It's not meant for anything other than that. I mean, Will's just got to get an idea.
Yeah, so they're singing Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat with Artie, played by Kevin McHale, on lead. And it should be said that Artie is in a wheelchair. You know, not that that's indicative of anything, but it doesn't change his talent. And they suck. They really... What? Those are the words out of Rachel's mouth. As soon as they finish that performance, straight away she's like, we suck. Yeah, you do. Like, and
have we even got to the bit with Finn yet?
We're getting there. So we get to, you know, Rachel's pissed because she didn't get the first new performance. And I basically says something, which is how I read it, that he seems to think that Will's using irony to enhance the performance. You know, because Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat, the guy's sitting down all the time, ha 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 ha, it's funny. And, you know, Rachel says there's nothing ironic about show choir, storms out, Will goes after her, and they have a conversation about, basically, she wants a better male lead. Which, I was good.
I don't know how to take that.
Like, yeah. Yeah, so they have a little conversation about, you know, she knows she's just a sophomore, but she doesn't want to leave high school with nothing to show for it. Unfortunately, this conversation gets cut short because we find out from Ken that Figgins wants to see Will because they want to rent out the auditorium for AA meetings, is it?
Yes.
And Will was like, if we place at regionals, Glee stays. And Figgins is like, what is it with you and this club? You've only got 5 kids. One of them's a cripple, which... Okay, and why does that matter?
You said beforehand we wouldn't use that word.
If they use it, I'm going to use it. It's open season.
Okay.
Because unlike them, I'm not using it to be mean. I'm using it to make a point. That what does it matter if he's in a wheelchair or not? As long as Artie can sing, what's the difference?
You're using it to quote directly from the show when we don't necessarily need to.
But, yeah, basically, they come to an understanding where Will is going to run detention for free to make it up to Figgins, which I'm pretty sure, because we glossed over the Figgins wants, how much is it? $60 a month,
yes,
to keep the Glee program running. So presumably that means Will is already running Glee Club for free.
Well, we don't know technically if he's running it yet. It could just be a trial thing that he literally is trying to set it up before he speaks to Figgins.
But it should be said that I think this is the hallmark of a good teacher, because he is immediately invested in these kids and their success. Like, I think if I would have had more teachers like this, I would have enjoyed going to school a lot more than I did. You know, and so, you know, we get a montage here. He goes to talk to Sue to ask if some of her Cheerios want to double up and join the Glee Club. He talks to Ken. This is intercut with him helping Emma wipe gum off of her shoe. And Emma actually gives him the idea that if you can get one of the popular kids to sign up, the others will fall right in line. And we then cut to Sheets and Things, where Terry Schuster, oh boy.
Because we're so far in, I don't even have the...
No, go for it.
I'll keep it as simple as I can right now.
You hate this bitch.
Let's just leave it at that for today. I don't have the mental energy to describe how I feel about this woman.
Oh, I do.
I know you do, but we have an episode to get through.
I do. Oh my God. This woman. We're not going to get into all of her discrepancies right now, because we are going to take a page from Prophecy Girls podcast at the end of this season and do Terry Schuster on trial. That is when we will lobby my real feelings against her. But yeah, I'm with you. I hate this bitch.
Let's leave it be briefly and then get to the...
Yeah, she's demanding something or other. Will goes to bring her lunch, and the first instinct is not to thank him, but to berate him for putting mayo on it. Fuck off, Terry. You know, but I'm just saying, if that was you, like, if that was you, whether I put something you didn't like on the sandwich or not, you would graciously smile and give me a hug and a kiss and accept it, right?
There's no need to read so much into it.
So we find out that, Sandy is now a drug dealer, and this actually plays a key point, because this always confused me, where Will gets the weed to plant it in Finn's locker later. So this is where he gets it, and this is when we jump to the locker room, where Will tries to talk to the guys about Glee Club, and it goes poorly. Let's just say that. You know, Park says he can sing and then just goes up to the front to fart in Will's face. They deface the sign-up sheet. But then, just when Will's ready to pack it in, he hears Finn singing in the shower. What did you think of this? Because obviously this is Corey Monteith's first vocal performance on this show.
It worked in the end, didn't it?
I said the opposite about Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat. But if this is meant to be funny, this is funny. I'm laughing. This is good. Go with this. You know. And then we need to talk about this. I'm sorry, but we have to. It's immoral. Rather than waiting until he gets out of the shower and going up and talking to him, Will plants drugs in Finn's locker. What the hell? Everybody discuss. What the fuck is this? He's meant to be a role model. What the fuck is this? If you did this at my school, you would get fired.
There's no need. It happened. It may not be morally ideal, but it happened, and
you actually had quite an interesting perspective on this, because I asked you, why don't you think Will just goes up and asks Finn outright? And you said you seem to think it's because of the peer pressure, or not peer pressure, but that he'd get tore a new asshole by his friends if they found out he was doing it.
Yes, and the idea is to keep the perspective as simple as possible. There's this simple motive. Yes, it's wrong, but at the end of the day, Finn got what he wanted out of it, to be part of something important.
Yeah, and it should be said here, we're not going to really get into it, but we do get some backstory about Finn, like when he was a kid, how he discovered his love of music. His mother, his dad died when they were fighting Osama bin Laden the first time. That's actually not true. We're going to find out how he really died in season 3. But for now, I'm just going to let the illusion continue. And so Will's like, you have two options. You can do detention now because I'm running it. So you can do 6 weeks, but that's going to remain on your permanent record. I feel so bad for Finn here as well, because he's like, I'll pee in a cop. You know, like, he doesn't even know that the chronic lady is a strain of weed.
And I'm the one that pointed that out.
You know, like, I get it. I get that Finn's dumb, but is he really that dumb? Because then a few seconds later, Will's like, you could lose your football scholarship, and he had no idea he even had one. He's like, I have a football scholarship to wear. You know, this scene is comedic, though, right? The whole, I'll pee in a cop. This is funny. And it gets funnier, because cut to Finn in the auditorium with the rest of the New Directions singing You're the One That I Want, terribly, I might add. And Mercedes cuts in and she's like, I'm not down with this background singing shit. And you go, girl. And yeah. We then go to we need to talk about this. So we go back to Will and Terry, they're in the craft room doing a jigsaw puzzle, and they get into an argument because basically Terry wants more money, Will's just happy doing what he's doing. We find out that she has a second credit card that I'm assuming Will knew about, but he didn't know how much was actually going into it.
I don't really know. To keep it simple, they had a fight over money. She decided that She wasn't happy with Will's job, basically. She wants him to become an accountant and make something better of himself for the sake of...
her, basically.
Yes.
Which, doesn't she... surely she realises that you can't just... because first off, you have to go to college to become a teacher. So surely she realises that you can't just slip out of being a teacher and then just go to be an accountant. Surely Will would have to go back to college for that, right?
At this point, I'm just going to say that I don't think she knows anything about life. No need to laugh at me for it.
That was way nicer than I was expecting.
Well, we've discussed this enough, and I don't...
and it should be said that this Saturday they're taking a trip to Carmel High to watch Vocal Adrenaline, their rivals, perform. And so we cut to that scene, we cut to Finn and Rachel talking. You know, she's kind of... is she trying to come on to him a little bit? Because she says, I think the team expects us to start dating. Is she coming on to him here?
In some sort of subtle way, I suppose, though.
Subtle and Rachel Berry in the same sentence? We find out that he's dating Quinn. And it should be said that he lied to Ken and to Park so he could go on this trip. He says that his mum had her prostate out because it's engorged. Okay. And Park just believes it, which I find pretty funny. So they go in. Will and Emma sit down, share a sandwich, talk about his marital problems. They go in to the Carmel Auditorium and we get a performance of Rehab by the late Amy Winehouse. What do you think of this performance?
As I said, I liked the dresses. The rest of it seemed a bit over the top, but it proved to be enough of a performance to get the new directions an idea of that they need to up the game.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree with you. Like, I feel like Rehab is, it's upbeat, it's energetic, it's fun. But in the grand scheme of things, probably could have been cut. Like, it doesn't... and I just love, at the end of it, you know, at the beginning, before they even start performing, Will's like, oh, we're fine, they don't have the talent that we've got. Cut to the end, and everybody's just looking shocked, and Tina's like, we're doomed. You know, so we cut to Finn. So I'm guessing, because the field trip was cut short, Finn left Carmel and then went back to go to football practice. Or is he still at Carmel? They don't say, do they?
No.
The reason I thought it was McKinley is because obviously all his friends are outside waiting with paintball guns. And, you know, Puck's like, women don't have prostates. I looked it up. It's like, you had to look it up to know that. I could have told you that, and I know nothing about biology. But, and they're like, you broke the rules for that. You must be punished. And Finn's like, wait, you don't have to do this. And they just shoot him with the paintballs. So, and it should be said that off screen, Finn quits. Like, we don't see him quit, we just know that he quits. And this is when we cut to the Schuster residence, and Will comes in, and there's this big banner that says congrats on it, and obviously Will thinks it's for the kids, because he's like, the kids haven't won anything yet, but no, Terry Schuster is pregnant. Yay, she's already nuts enough as it is. Can you imagine what she's going to be like with pregnancy hormones coursing through her veins? Remember, we're not spoiling the plot twist.
No.
So, yeah, let's just leave it at that. She's, since she's pregnant, she's going to become even more nuts than she already is. And this is when, is it the next scene that Will breaks the news to the kids?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
that he's given his 2 weeks' notice, and everyone basically says that they can't carry on the Glee Club without him.
Well, except for Finn, because Finn's pretty happy about it. He's like, so does this mean I don't have to do this anymore, or... And then everybody looks at him as if to say, shut the fuck up, so he doesn't finish his sentence. But... and... yeah, we... he says that he's loved being his their teacher, and he promises to find them a great replacement before he goes. Which, this is sad, right? Mm. Because he's poured his heart and soul into this thing, even though it's just getting off the ground. And now, simply to appease Terry, he's decided he has to...
keep her happy?
Yeah. This isn't fair, because it's clear that he loves what he does.
Well, unfortunately, on her part, she would think that, or vocally think that he would have to make sacrifices to support her and the new baby. Bearing in mind she is not in the mind of accepting that she needs to put more effort into it.
Yeah.
The most basic 12-hour week as possible.
Yeah, because it should be said, when he tells her that he has to start working late, her first reaction is, now I've got to go home and cook dinner for myself. Like, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we cut back to the auditorium later on, and we get Will performing Leaving on a Jet Plane by John Denver. What do you think of this? Like, I think...
it was nice and it was simple.
Yeah, like, obviously, we... this isn't the energetic Will performance that we're going to get next episode when he does Gold Digger.
No.
But...
it doesn't call for that.
I think just as an introduction to Matthew Morrison's vocals... I think he did quite well.
It worked, it was pleasant, and it was simple.
Replacement level? Have you heard the original song?
I can't hear it in my head. I may have done, but I can't.
Well,
hear
I have many times, thanks to my dad, and I can say this is infinitely better than John Denver's version. And so we cut to some sort of classroom. And this is where Will's filling his application out, right?
Yeah.
And Emma comes up to him and says, it should be said that earlier on, when Kem found out that Finn joined, he was pissed. And we find out it's because he asked Emma out again, and he finally admitted that... and she finally admitted that she liked... well, she doesn't say Will. She just says, I like someone else. So, question. Did he tip Puck and the boys off to go to Carmel with the paintball guns? Did he tip them off that Finn was going to be there for some Glee Club thing?
I don't know. It's not mentioned. And I can't go off anything that isn't actively mentioned. Coming up with theories doesn't necessarily work.
I know, but I'm just saying that seems like the most... I don't think that they just found out, and that just seems like the most logical explanation to me. Even though they never bring it up, I don't think Puck would be smart enough to just figure this out on his own.
I don't know.
But, yeah, so... Emma has made an appointment for Will in the career centre, and, you know, she says you need some guidance, and he's like, I'm having a kid, what I need is better benefits. Which, and you can tell that that's clearly something that Terry's been drilling into him, that's clearly not what he thinks.
Well, Well, he doesn't seem happy about it during the conversation, but I think he's just gone with it anyway for an easy life.
Because he even says to Emma, doesn't he, that he'll miss her.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I want to give Emma the benefit of the doubt here and say she's just being a good friend. But is she, or is it because she's in love with him that she's doing this? Or do you think it's a mixture of both?
I don't know. I can't really read into that. I just take it as it is.
Yeah. And now we get with what is really, other than the final performance, the last really big dialogue scene where Finn and Puck are on the football field. Finn spins some ball winder about Will saying that he'd give him enough credit to pass Spanish if he joined the Glee Club. And he's like, it doesn't matter anyway, I quit, so is that it? And Puck's like, yeah, that's it. As a welcome back to the world of the normal, we got you a present. And it should be said before this that Rachel went to see him at his locker. And this is where we get introduced to Quinn, her only line this episode, right?
Yeah.
It should be said Santana, played by Naya Rivera, is with her as well, but she doesn't speak. And, you know, Rachel says to him, you can't keep worrying about what people think, Finn. You're better than all of them. And that already kind of gets him thinking. But then when Puck presents him with his present, which is what?
I'll keep it simple because it upsets me. They've somehow managed to lock Artie in a porta potty, and Finn lets him out.
Yeah, they say they're gonna flip it, and Finn's like, isn't that kind of dangerous? And Puck's like, well, he's already in a wheelchair, which true, but not the point. And so, without actually saying this, Finn's like, no, I'm not doing this. Opens the door, drags him out, and Puck's pissed. He's like, why are you helping out this loser? And Finn says something that I like here, because he's like, don't you get it? We're all losers. You know, obviously, I'm sad that that's what he thinks about himself. Because you know, we've already seen that he doesn't have the highest self-esteem to begin with. But, you know, and he says that, you know, of all the kids who graduate, maybe half will go to college and two will leave the state to do it. I'm not afraid of being a loser or being called a loser because I can accept that that's what I am. But I am sorry about turning my back on something that actually made me happy for the first time in my life. And Puck makes again, homophobic joke. He says, oh, so you're quitting to join, what did he call it? Homo explosion.
Yeah.
And Finn's like, no, I'm doing both because you can't win without me and neither can they, which is a bit arrogant in my mind. Because at this point, you're not the best singer in there. Or do you think he means because of his leadership quality?
I would go with that option, to be honest.
Because it should be said in this next scene that he's the one that rallies the troops, as it were. Because he sees his mum's ex spraying the school lawn, the radio's on, and he gets this smile on his face, and you can tell he's got an idea. So we cut back to the auditorium. Rachel is bossing everybody around as Rachel's want to do. And then Finn comes in and basically he gives a speech about how I don't want to be the guy that goes around throwing eggs at people and throwing pee balloons at Kurt and nailing all his furniture to his roof. And although it should be said that Finn wasn't actually there when they did that.
No.
But he apologises all the same and he says, which we knew from the second we saw him, that's not who I am and I'm sick of it. This is what I want to be doing with you. I used to think this was the lamest thing on earth and maybe It is. And as a Glee Club expat myself, can I say, yeah, it is. It really is. But we're all here for the same reason, because we want to be good at something. What do you think of this? Because
I think it's a good thing that he tries to get everyone involved, giving Mercedes the job of a uniform, so to speak, Rachel on choreography, and among other things, asking Artie if he can get the jazz band involved.
Yeah, because he plays guitar, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, although the one thing that does make me laugh is he says to Tina, what are you good at? And before she can get a word out, he's just like, we'll figure something out.
That's why I kept it narrow. There's a few people to cover. He hadn't worked everyone out yet.
So that must be why Kurt gets left out then. Because remember, when we were watching it a little while ago, I was like, what about Kurt? You didn't give Kurt anything.
You pointed out about the costumes, and then I had to correct you and say, because there's girls in the club, he won't know how we dress.
Yeah.
Basically, so Mercedes is the best option. And clearly, with the simplicity of the clothing, it kind of works.
We'll talk about the uniforms in a minute when we actually see them, because...
All right.
Mercedes then makes a joke. She calls him, she says, what are you bringing to the table, Justin Timberlake? And Finn's like, well, I've got the music. And then we cut to the, I'm guessing it's the teacher's lounge. With Will and Emma. And Emma basically nostalgia baits Will by showing him a tape of himself performing at Nationals in 93. And she says, do you know what that is? That's you happier than I've ever seen you. And do you want to know why? And Will actually gets pretty choked up. And he says, because I loved what I was doing. I knew when, before we were even halfway through that song, that we were going to win. I was a part of something and I mattered. And the only time that I felt that way since then was when Terry said, told me I'm going to be a dad. And then he kind of stops and he's like, no, I need to provide for my kid. And Emma says to him, but provide what? The understanding that money is the most important thing. And I really like this line, or the only life worth living is one that you're really passionate about. And obviously at this point, we don't see his decision because he's walking out of the school. I'm assuming he's made his mind up.
He's walking down a corridor and comes across either the auditorium or choir room and hears music, singing and vocalising, enters the room and... the group are singing Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Oh my god, this...
I like this version. It's simple. There's actual music in the background and it comes across.
We get
they're
Finn
actually
on...
a team.
Yeah, we get Finn on the drums at some point. Artie doesn't sing, but Artie's on the guitar.
Yes.
And this is iconic. Like, this is when... when you say season one Glee to me, this is immediately what I picture, is them upstairs in the jeans and the red t-shirts, you know, led by Finn and Rachel. And I don't know why, I said this to you when we were watching it, I actually got a little bit teared up and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I think it's because you said, like you said, this is the germination of... Finchel.
They'd previously done it with the You're the One That I Want clip, but
Finn looked like he was scared of her in that clip. And and this is basically Glee's anthem. Like, they perform this song 6 times over the course of this series. So much so, actually, that by the time they call back to it, they use this version as archive footage in the season 6 finale. But by that point, it's they've done it so many times that it just rings hollow.
Okay.
You know, like, my second favourite version is the one they do in season 5, like, after they've lost, soft spoiler alert, after they've lost Nationals and the Glee Club's been disbanded.
Mm.
You know the one I'm talking about, right? The version with both the old kids and the new kids, obviously, minus Finn.
Yeah.
But I love this. I love this version of it. I like the regionals version too that we get at the end of this season. But this is how it all started. And you can see now why this show caught on the way it did. You know, this is iconic. So they end the performance and it should be said over the course towards the end, we see Sue, Santana and Quinn up on a balcony. They look pretty worried, actually, and I don't know why.
It doesn't matter why, they're just watching.
Park walks out. It's hard to get a read on Park's reaction to this, but he definitely looks interested in what's going on. Like, you read it as maybe he's just shocked that Finn actually has the balls to do something that he himself secretly wants to do.
Still early days, but I'm sure because he ends up joining.
Yes, soft spoiler alert, Park does join the Glee Club at the end of the 4th episode. And so we hear clapping, Rachel looks up, and Will's like, good guys, it's a 9, we're going to make it a 10. Rachel needs to hit the 1s and the 5s. He thinks if he works on it with Finn, he could hit a high B. And Finn's happy about this now, and he's like, so does this mean you're staying? And Will says, it would kill me to see you win Nationals without me. From the top, cut to credits. Okay, so we have a bit more business before we get out of here. Favourite song. So we have, hold on, Respect, sung by Mercedes. Mr. Sengavane, sung by Kurt. I Kissed a Girl by Tina Coyne-Chan. On My Own, Miss Rachel Berry.
I did say that one. Well, I don't know. It's a toss-up between On My Own and the first Don't Stop Believing. Simple as that.
You're the One That I Want, the OG New Directions. Rehab, Vocal Adrenaline. Leaving on a Jet Plane, sung by Will. And Don't Stop Believing, sung by Finn, Rachel and the New Directions. So you just said it's a toss-up. You need to pick one now. What's your favourite?
Okay. Since you're holding me at gunpoint, I'll say Don't Stop Believing then.
Okay, we're on the same page. Obviously, I think I'm picking this because of nostalgia. Why are you picking this song?
Because I liked it. I liked it and I found it fun.
Which can't be said for all of the versions of this song that they do. Because it does seem to get a bit repetitive.
At the end of the day, you're trying to get me into this show. All I want now is something genuine, heartfelt and fun, and with any luck, I'll get it.
Yeah. All right. Gold Star.
That would be the main point for me would be Finn, mainly for A, taking Artie out of the toilet, and B, owning up to himself and to everyone else what he really wants to do, because that takes guts.
Yeah.
A lot of other people in this program so far don't seem to have the guts.
Looking at you, Will. Yeah, I'm torn, to be honest, because a good case could be made for quite a few people in this. Like, yes, a good case could be made for Finn, but a good case could be made for Emma, a good case could be made for Will. Because the thing is, I don't think we should give Finn cookies for being a halfway decent human being. But I'm not really seeing any other better option at the moment. And plus, I did say in my intro, in our intro episode, that he has my fan card.
There you go.
He is my favourite character. Yeah, do you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to give it to Finn. Okay, so straight away, what we'll do at the end of the season when we do our wrap-up is we'll tally all the gold stars. So already, Finn is leading with 2. Do you want to give an honorary one to, like, anybody else?
No.
No honourable mention?
No.
Okay, I'm going to give an honourable shout-out to Will. Hopefully I'll be in a position next episode where I can give him the gold star. I hope so, anyway. Alright. Last bit of business and then we can get out of here. Slushy ratings.
I believe that I said simply because Terry was annoying me, I gave it a 0.5 because I enjoyed everything apart from the scenes and dialogue that she made.
Yeah, I can understand that. Like, I was going to give it a 1, but talking it through with you, I've been talked down.
Okay.
I've been talked down to the same as you, a 0.5.
Yeah.
Because I really do. While this isn't one of my favourite episodes, well, it's 1, but it's more in my top 50 than it is my top 20 or 10.
Okay.
I enjoyed it so much more. I enjoyed watching it so much more this time, maybe because it was the anticipation of having this conversation.
Okay.
That I just noticed more. You know, and I think maybe that's just the upside of watching these things with you. Is that you're able, because you're older, you can put a more mature spin on things and see things that I can't necessarily do. Can't necessarily see.
Well, I was in secondary school a long time before you were.
Yeah, you know, it should be said that I'm closer in age to these kids than Lizzie is, so maybe that's why I can identify with them a little bit more, because a few years ago I was one.
The world is a different place compared to when I was growing up. There was no TikTok or Facebook or Instagram or anything like that I worked with.
If you wanted to make music back then, you'd have to do stuff like this.
Precisely. I'll stick to simplicity.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, that's it really, isn't it?
Yes.
Like we said at the top of this, we will be jam-packed this week. You will be getting another episode. You'll be getting 102 Showmance tomorrow. Hopefully, because we'll have proper notes, because it's not as disjointed. The conversation won't be as long-winded as this one was. I know, I hold my hands up. You can't see me, listeners, but I'm holding my hands up. That was my fault. But I'm just saying, with Showmance, there's not as much to chunk into.
Yeah.
As there is this episode. So you will be getting Showmance tomorrow, Akafellas on Saturday, and as if that wasn't enough, you will also be getting an episode of Don't Make Me Angry on Sunday, where we review the season 4 episode, King of the Beach.
You may want to point out that that's an Incredible Hulk,
yes,
podcast. That's a completely different series.
Well, if they followed us from that, then they know what we're talking about. But yeah, for those of you who are here just for the Glee stuff, yes, we do currently have another podcast called Don't Make Me Angry, an Incredible Hulk TV series podcast, where the clue's in the name, we break down and review episodes of The Incredible Hulk in a very similar format to this. So if rambling is your cup of tea, Go listen to that show because I go off on some tangential shit.
And I'm the one that has to rein you in and get you back to the point of the episode.
Yes. But overall, I think there just are some fascinating conversations in that show. You know, we reviewed the first last week. We're doing King of the Beats this week. And yeah, this... And also, like I said, you'll be getting Glee 102 Showmance tomorrow and then Glee 103 Acafellas on Saturday. Two very fun episodes from what I remember. You know, nowhere near as good as this one, but... Yeah, we've been running long, so we need to get this out. We will see... We will be back tomorrow with Showmance. Until then, I'm Mark.
And I'm Elizabeth.
And we will see you guys at sectionals. Bye, guys.